Highly social insects, such as honeybees, exhibit elaborate systems of division of labor that are based in part on age, in which workers perform a series of tasks when they're young inside the nest, and then they transition to foraging later in life. The tasks carried out by these different worker age groups are typically interrelated to one another, especially to foraging success, and thus must be adjusted to one another. Yet the workers carrying out these different tasks typically attend to different aspects of the nest and respond to different stimuli. So a challenge in the study of social insects is to understand how information flow is orchestrated among these different worker groups to achieve this task coordination. From the perspective of social network theory, a honeybee colony is a large diffuse network in which the individual workers are the nodes, and these individuals then are organized into communities embedded within the network based on task performance. And then edges refer to the communicative interactions that occur both within and among these different groups. Social network theory recognizes two types of communicative interactions. The first are referred to as strong ties. And these tend to operate not entirely, but primarily within a group of workers that interacts more or less consistently. The other type of communicative interaction that's recognized is referred to as a weak tie. And weak ties are much more broadly distributed throughout a network, and they operate often in a more general fashion than strong ties do. And there is a growing body of literature to suggest that as social complexity increases, weak ties play an ever more important role in determining both the structure and the function of networks. And in a social insect colony like honeybees, interactions that function in the manner of a weak tie might be important mechanisms that help to organize information flow among these different task groups. So to fully understand the structure of communication systems and social networks, it's important to identify the interactions that may function in the capacity of weak ties. Now, there are many types of interactions in social insects that can fit this bill, but I want to focus today on a category of communication signals that are referred to as modulatory communication signals. Unlike signals like the waggle dance, which is performed by, which is directed toward a particular age class of recipient and elicits a specific response, modulatory signals function in a much more general fashion. They can be directed toward virtually any worker within the colony of any age, and they elicit a non-specific general effect on activity that operates to increase the likelihood that recipients will contact other signals and cues. Thus, modulatory signals can influence the performance of many different tasks simultaneously, and they may play a role in organizing this are contributing to this movement of information not only within task groups but between groups that perform interdependent tasks. Now, signals that function as modulatory communication signals are widespread in social insects, and there's also a growing realization that as social complexity increases, there is an increasing reliance on modulatory signals to organize cooperative labor. But we don't have a really good understanding of why these trends occur in social insects. And so what I want to argue today is that the reason you see these patterns in the use of modulatory communication is because these signals function as weak ties that help to organize collective activity with increasing social complexity. And the signal that I want to focus on is the vibration signal of the honeybee. And this consists of a worker rapidly vibrating her body dorsal ventrally for 1 to 2 seconds while grabbing a recipient. She then breaks contact, moves over to the comb, grabs another bee, vibrates it, and so on, sometimes performing hundreds of signals an hour while roaming throughout large areas of the nest. And both the behavior of the vibrating bees and the response of recipients suggests that this signal functions in a modulatory manner and may also operate as a weak tie. Most of the vibrating bees are successful foragers, so they have an immediate knowledge of the foraging environment. And as these bees move throughout the nest, they will contact hundreds of different workers, but they only perform vibration signals on average on about 50% of the bees they contact. The other bees contacted are antennated, but then bypassed. And that suggests that these vibrating bees might be selecting recipients from among an array of possible receivers, and that in turn could have an impact on the patterns of information flow. And so to put this in the terms that Anna Dornhaus was using earlier, this is about as pushy, I guess, as advertising can get. Now, this selection of recipients, if it is occurring, what is it based on? Well, it's not based on recipient age. As a vibrating bee is roaming through the nest, she contacts bees of all ages, and she will vibrate bees of all ages. And this figure shows for 8 different colonies just the mean age of bees that are contacted that receive the signal versus those that are contacted and do not. And there is no difference in age of these two groups, suggesting that these vibrating bees are not directing their signals preferentially toward any certain age group and thus not toward any particular task or task set. But what does influence choice of recipient apparently is a recipient's activity level. As vibrating bees are moving through the nest, this bee will contact workers that are actively engaged in task performance and those that are not. And while workers of all activity levels can receive vibration signals, signalers preferentially direct their signals toward workers that are less active, and these are bees of all ages. These bees then respond to these signals with a nonspecific increase in activity that influences their behavior in 2 main ways. First, it increases the rate at which they interact with their nest and nest mates, and thus it may potentially increase the rate at which they acquire information about their nest. Compared to same age, non-vibrated control bees, those that receive the signal have greater locomotion. And so that could influence the rate at which they contact nest mates in different regions of the comb, and contact rates are known to influence task decisions. Compared to non-vibrated controls, recipients also have increased cell inspection activity, and that could give them an increased knowledge about comb content and colony state. And then finally, compared to non-vibrated controls, recipients have slightly but significantly greater rates of trophallactic interactions. And as Walter just explained, trophallaxis is an important source of information acquisition in honeybee colonies. So one thing that this signal does is it increases the rate at which workers perhaps become aware of what is going on in their colony, at least for the stimuli that they attend to. And then either in addition to this or because of it, it results in increased task performance. Compared to non-vibrated controls, the vibrated recipients spend more time in brood care, food processing, comb manipulation, and all tasks combined. And these data are more for younger in-hive bees. Older bees that receive the vibration signal are more likely to contact waggle dancers, and they're more likely to engage in foraging. So the vibration signal then seems to exert this nonspecific modulatory influence that enhances information acquisition and thus the performance of tasks that are appropriate for a recipient's age. And thus I think that this signal may be positioned to function as a weak tie. Because it has this nonspecific effect, it can influence workers in different task groups, performing different tasks, and that could help coordinate their activity and adjust it in particular to the rate at which food is entering the nest, because the signalers are primarily successful foragers. And thus I think it may operate by fine-tuning worker activity to colony conditions by modifying their responsiveness to other signals and cues, those signals and cues of being the ones that actually trigger a particular behavior. Now, if that's the case, if this is how modulatory signals work, and if this is one of the functions of weak ties, then you can make a prediction that removing these signalers should not cause the social system, the social network, to unravel and collapse, because there are other specific signals to still trigger these specific actions. But by removing these signalers, you should be able to slow down the speed and efficiency with which workers form these collective decisions that underlie these collaborative activities. And we tested this idea by going back and re-examining some data that we collected several years ago, looking at the role of the vibration signal in the house hunting process of honeybee swarms. When a swarm is clustered in vegetation like this, scouts have to locate potential new nest cavities. They then have to winnow those down to a single choice. And then once a nest cavity has been selected, the entire swarm has to become airborne and move en masse to that chosen site. So there are a variety of collective decisions involved in this house hunting process. And house hunting also involves at least 3 different communication signals. The waggle dance is used to communicate the location of potential nest cavities. Scouts perform waggle dances on the surface of the swarm to indicate the location of potential nest sites. Initially, a variety of different sites are communicated, but the waggle dance activity eventually becomes focused on one specific site, and then all the dancers, or most all the dancers on a swarm, are indicating that same site. You may have 20 or more dancers at once dancing for the same site, and that's referred to as consensus dancing, and that indicates that a destination has been selected. Consensus dancing then triggers the next part of the house hunting process, the liftoff preparation period, when the entire swarm becomes prepared for that mass flight. And that involves a second signal called worker piping, which consists of a worker pressing her body against another bee while emitting a high-pitched sound, and that stimulates the recipients to warm her flight muscles to get ready to become airborne. And then a third signal involved in house hunting is the vibration signal, which occurs throughout this entire process. And it reaches a crescendo during the liftoff preparation period, as do these other two signals, and that then culminates in this mass flight. So our question was, if we remove these bees, do we alter the ability of swarms to produce these other signals and or respond to them in an efficient manner? So to look at this, we set up swarms on these observation stands. This allowed us to paint mark the waggle dancers and remove vibrators. And we were interested in the removal of vibrators, the effect it had on two aspects of this process. First, the time required to reach consensus dancing, and then once that occurred, the time required for the liftoff preparation period until the entire swarm became airborne. And we conducted a total of 6 trials, and each trial involved 3 different swarms. First, we had a test swarm, and from this swarm, we paint marked every waggle dancer, and we removed every vibrating bee that we saw throughout the house hunting process. Then we also had a manipulated control swarm. In these swarms, we paint marked every waggle dancer and vibrator to keep track of the number of signalers. But for every vibrator removed here, we removed one randomly selected unmarked bee from the manipulated control to control for the effects of bee removal. Now, earlier work had told us that about 20% of the vibrators in a swarm also perform waggle dances for nest sites. So to control for that effect of removing some of these nest site dancers, for every 5th vibrator removed here, we removed one known paint marked nest site dancer from the manipulated control. So by the time a trial was over, we had removed exactly the same total number of bees from these two swarms and very similar numbers of nest site dancers. And then a third swarm we had in each trial was an unmanipulated control in which we paint marked all the waggle dancers and vibrators observed, but we didn't remove any bees. And then comparisons between the two control types allowed us to more fully evaluate the effect of the removal of vibrators per se. Well, again, we did 6 trials. We had a total of 18 swarms. And what we found is that, as predicted, the removal of these vibrating bees did not prevent these swarms from successfully completing the house hunting process. All 18 swarms eventually became airborne and moved to a new nest site. Removal of vibrating bees also did not influence the time required to achieve consensus dancing. There was no difference among our 3 swarm types. And actually, that maybe is not surprising. Selection of a nest site involves the waggle dance, which is performed by and decoded by only the older age foraging bees. And so for tasks that operate within an age group like that, the modulatory communication and more importantly, perhaps weak ties, are less important in these situations in formulating those collective decisions. We also found that the removal of vibrating bees did not influence the ability of these swarms to produce the high level of worker piping necessary for liftoff. All 18 of our swarms eventually produced levels of worker piping that are associated with successful liftoff. But what we did find is that the removal of vibrating bees greatly influenced the time required for the liftoff preparation period. Our test swarms, compared to the manipulated controls, they required 7 times as much time to achieve this coordinated mass liftoff. And this was despite the fact that we had removed exactly the same total number of bees from these two swarms and very similar numbers of waggle dancers. Now, in comparison, there was no difference between the two control swarms in their liftoff preparation time, suggesting that it wasn't just the removal of bees in general that delayed this liftoff, but the removal of vibrators themselves. And it's important to point out that during these extended liftoff preparation periods, these swarms continued to produce high and consistent levels of consensus dancing and worker piping. So the total cumulative effect of those signals in these test swarms were actually much greater than in the control swarms, yet these swarms still took 7 times as long to achieve that liftoff. And that is consistent with the hypothesis that by operating in this modulatory manner that might influence the responsiveness to these other signals and cues, the vibration signal then helps to these collective decisions to be performed quickly and efficiently. And so then, in conclusion, I think that the vibration signal exerts this nonspecific modulatory influence that allows it to function as a weak tie that helps to coordinate activity both within and perhaps more importantly among workers that perform different tasks. And I also think that this is social network theory can then help us to understand some of these patterns that we see in the use of modulatory communication. It is widespread in social insects, perhaps because of this decentralized division of labor, and that this can help us understand why, as social complexity increases, there is an increased reliance on modulatory signals to coordinate these ever-increasing tasks. And I would like to thank lots of people, and I have time for questions. Yes?
This may be a little before or ahead of the research program here, but do you have any idea what the vibrators, what changes in the recipients of the vibrators physiologically?
Right. We have started looking at that, and the only thing I can tell you on that is we have found that compared to non-vibrated controls, same age controls, recipients within about 15 to 20 minutes have a slightly elevated juvenile hormone titer. And juvenile hormone does influence response thresholds, at least with respect to the age-related progression of division of labor. And so it might be exerting a hormonal, an endocrinological influence that perhaps lowers response thresholds, eliciting this increased activity.